probably right up there with falling from a great height, or being on an airplane you know is going to crash land, or being a fan of the visiting team at Citizens Bank Ballpark around a bunch of drunk Philadelphians, is the fear of being buried alive. It's maybe not so common anymore, and hopefully it never happens. But in the days of yellow fever epidemics, when shallow breathing and loss of consciousness were a common symptom of untreated disease, death was sometimes misdiagnosed. The result was someone being placed into a casket and lowered into the earth before their time on earth was really done. Except in the case of today's story, when they were placed somewhere above the earth and locked into an early eternity, one they could see coming before their very eyes. This is Buried Under Beaufort, the Tomb Edition.
So we're back this week, or this month, if you will, the Tomb Edition. I mean, I haven't really thought of Beaufort as much of a mausoleum kind of place, Ryan. And I'll be honest, I've never worried about being buried alive, but I guess that didn't happen as much up north as it does down here.
Wow, that's a way to bring up the treasured life you've had. And it's funny that we're going to tackle one of the most oft-mentioned ghost stories, especially in the Kappa ghost tours going on right now. Speaking of which, do we have feedback from the last little mini-sode we had?
Yeah, feedback. Well, I'll get to that in a second, but I mean, I totally missed a good, you know, the South Rise again kind of pun there, as we talked about, you know, being buried alive and such. But feedback. I mean, other than your mom texting me, asking me why there was an episode that I wasn't on, no, not feedback on no feedback on that one. But I did go on a Kappa Ghost tour with my wife 2 weekends ago, and I'm ashamed to say not only was this my first Kappa Ghost tour in its illustrious 30 years, but it was also my first carriage ride in my more than 20 years here in Beaufort. And it was a great experience. I mean, kudos to Kappa, the Exchange Club, for doing such a great job. The stories are great. Actors, tour guides, everything amazing. Definitely would recommend everyone check it out next year. And I'm hearing rumor there's even word you and I may maybe lead one of the ghost tours next year.
Yeah, I've heard something about that. And honestly, if you are not taking a carriage to the grocery store and back, you're really missing out. That's kind of what I use it for. But we also went on opening night and we did the walking tour, and they do a really good job. My 9-year-old eventually grabbed onto me about halfway through the tour and said, when is the next jump scare? And I'm like, buddy, that's all it is jump scares.
Yeah, don't worry, Reams. I was also asking my wife when the next jump scare would be. But yeah, if you didn't get to experience the tour this year, make sure you make a point of going next year and maybe ask Ryan to go with you if you're scared, like a 9-year-old.
Yeah, all right. But back to the mausoleum.
Right, above ground tomb. I mean, it's something you see all over New Orleans, and it makes sense there with the water level being so high underground. And you think here in the low country, you might see more of it since it's not really all that different in geography from the lower part of Louisiana. Sidebar, Ryan, the number of people who visit Carolyn and I here and ask why it's called the Low Country, I mean, man, if I had a nickel for every time, but it really is as simple as us being so close to sea level. Much like Lil Jon, we get low, low, low.
Yeah, I think they call it the Bayou. And yeah, I always notice in movies when they film things in Louisiana how much it looks like Beaufort. Except for maybe in A Time to Kill. I don't know if that was Louisiana. Maybe it was Mississippi. I don't remember. But it kind of looked like Beaufort. And everyone in that movie had sweat dripping from their faces all the time. Here in the Low Country, we at least have air conditioning. Maybe not much else, but we got that.
Yeah, we do have air conditioning, and I'm not quite sure how we got through five episodes, and this is our first John Grisham reference. But anyway, most of the cemeteries here have either raised tombstones or flat markers, at least in my observation. I know you clearly have more experience with gravestones and markers than I do.
Yeah, that is true. And we do have some very, you know, small island cemeteries and downtown churchyards with a few above ground tombs. In most cases, they don't really stand out all that much among other markers because most of them are, you know, they're full granite, marble, combination of granite, brick. Almost all of them, because of their age, are slightly broken or in decay. They've been in this harsh sea salt air climate for hundreds of years now, so it's kind of to be expected.
All right, hold on. So is this what we're talking about today with one of those? Because if you tell me it's one of the broken marble graves and there's a spirit that rises up out of it every October or something, I mean, I'm finally going back to New York. It's not the lack of sports here or the abundance of what you call critters. It's going to be the final straw for me. It's going to be some kind of malevolent, you know, evil spirit coming out of a broken, cliched grave.
Yeah, that would be such a beaver thing. But the one we're talking about today is what I would call highly unique. And there's definitely critters around there. It's actually a bricked-in tomb with a roof over it. It kind of looks like maybe a forested house for a troll or one of those fancy buildings they put over a bunch of sewer pipes or electrical equipment that they want to hide.
And so this one we're talking about, is this brick tomb, is at St. Helena?
Yeah, it's at the churchyard at St. Helena Parish, or the Anglican Church. When I was a kid, it was called the Episcopalian Church. I don't know. That's not my denomination. I don't know what all happened. But imagine going to sleep one night Episcopalian and waking up the next day suddenly Anglican. And I bet if they make a movie version, there's also, you know, a kid who wakes up Anglican Tom Hanks the next day, and he's got to find a statue of Jesus to put a coin into and put him back right or something.
That has got to be the dumbest plot for a movie that doesn't exist that I've ever heard. I mean, I don't even know what you're referencing. Is this like an Opus Dei thing, or are we talking Zoltar? Or I'm lost.
Nah, wait till you read my script for Forrest Gump 2.
Anyway, life might be like a box of chocolates, but if our listeners want to find the tomb for themselves that we're talking about, obviously be respectful in the churchyard, but know that it definitely stands out. It's just as Ryan described, a brick building with a roof. Obviously, the brick is very old, as Dr. Perry was entombed there.
Yeah, the rest of the cemetery, it's a who's who of Beaufort's oldest names: Barnwell, Danner, Elliot, Rhett, Shepherd, Talbert, Von Harten, all the names that you hear throughout Beaufort's history. But incidentally, kind of disappointing, no one named Otis Spunkmeyer. But because of the age of the cemetery and the population that's come through here over time, there's a number of Revolutionary era British soldiers buried there, and along with about 70 or so Confederate soldiers who joined 100 years later.
Okay, but back to Dr. Perry. He's basically one of the most famous in the graveyard because of the unique structure and this incredibly unique story that we're about to tell, which is hard to verify, but has been passed down verbally and in writing over the generations.
Right. It's kind of a legend. And we'll kind of start with the yellow fever outbreak in Savannah in 1820. It killed approximately 700 residents or so, Savannians, I guess we would say. But this was after an even more...
Savannites? I don't even know. Yeah.
Is it Savannites?
No, I'm kidding. Savannians.
Yeah, well, people from Savannah. It followed a more major outbreak in Philadelphia and Baltimore 20 years prior to that, around 1800. So yellow fever was already running rampant in the area, but the records here have Dr. Perry, dying in 1825. And it's said that because he treated so many patients with yellow fever, he sometimes knew that they looked deceased when in fact they were still very much alive.
Well, I wouldn't say very much alive. I mean, just alive.
Right. But after treating so many with it, he knew there was the possibility of being buried alive. So here's where the whole oral history that's been passed down from website to website. Perry, according to tradition, told his family that upon his death, they were to bury him with gold, myrrh, and all of his most expensive Beanie Babies.
No frankincense? Okay, I know this part of the story. He told them to bury them with a loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and a pickaxe, so that if he did indeed wake up alive in the tomb and couldn't roll the stone away, see what we did there? He would eat the bread and drink the wine, gather some strength, and chop his way out of there like the Kool-Aid man. Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. I told this story recently to a group of middle schoolers and their first question, like, you know, it inspires a lot of questions. But the first one was whether or not the bread was still there. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it maybe is, but it's moldy. And then they asked about the wine. And I said, well, that only gets better with age. So, you know, hey, kids, there's some 200-year-old Napa Valley goodness in there.
So drunk as he may be, suffice to say, he never broke out, because that obviously would be a very different story we'd be telling.
Yeah, that's a whole new aspect of the tourism industry here. But he did not break out, no. But his family apparently gave him plenty of time to try, because when you look closely at the tomb, you can see the bricks covering the opening, or what was the opening, appear to be in better shape, likely because they are newer than the surrounding brick. So it leads scholars, unlike me, to think that they were probably placed there after some time when they were sure it was safe to do so.
So here's a fun fact. The term wake, as in holding awake after someone dies, actually comes from these times in the 1800s or so, when families would wait for a period to watch after someone who was believed to have been dead or not totally alive, to make sure that they didn't suddenly, literally, wake. So that's interesting. And if nothing else from this podcast, you get that fun fact. But anyway, back to Dr. Perry. So we've got a brick tomb that looks like a small house, and we've definitely got a body inside with molded bread, centuries-old wine, and possibly a weapon.
Right. And knowing that is possible, you know, inside there, it's tempting to people to walk around the graveyard to explore it. But again, do so respectfully. Don't be like me.
I mean, you don't have to tell me twice to not be like you, but pray tell, what did you do?
Picture it, Sicily, 1938. It's dusk on a Wednesday night in the early 1990s, back in the last century. And instead of being at youth activities at church, a friend and I sneak over into the graveyard.
To read aloud to each other passages from Ephesians or 2 Corinthians?
You know, 2 Corinthians has always been my favorite verse in that book. Incidentally, the same book where I learned a bunch of patriotic songs. But anyway... No, we were there to walk around Dr. Perry's tomb and then to run back out of the graveyard when we hear a knock coming from the brick enclosure.
Chances it's a practical joke from Anglicans in the bushes waiting on two dumb Baptist kids to trample on hallowed ground.
You know, how do I say this? About as high as an acorn falling from a tree and hitting the tomb's roof, because that's probably what really happened. And I'll never know. But I do know that this is the most famous thing about Dr. Perry, and that's got to be frustrating for his legacy, right? Like, some doctors from that time, they're known for performing daylight surgeries with unsanitized instruments or making great advances in the field of bloodletting, but Dr. Perry, fear of being buried alive.
And I mean, it's not a common fear at the time. I mean, it was pretty unique from what we understand, but there is a similar legend down the road from Beaufort over there on Edisto Island.
There is around the same time. And since this isn't buried under Edisto, we won't go into too much detail, but there's a pretty famous story, that of Julia Legree. It's spelled Laguerre, but I don't know. We always just say Legree. She died during a similar time period, about 30 years after Dr. Perry, and of a very similar cause, or not similar cause as it is.
And she asked her family also to bury her with an axe and some whiskey.
You know, I'm not sure she asked them anything, but she was still relatively young when she died, in her 20s. And they buried her above ground in the family vault, the mausoleum, on the very edge of the Presbyterian graveyard on Edisto, right by the tree line. So different sources, you know, it may have been yellow fever. It may have been diphtheria. It could have been, I don't know, any number of typhoid. So many things we don't talk about anymore, right? Tuberculosis. I mean, what happened to consumption? But it's still the same as Dr. Perry's greatest fear, right? She went into a deep coma. They couldn't detect a pulse, and so they buried her in the family mausoleum. But a few years after that, when another family member died, they opened the door to the vault to put the other deceased family member in, and they found Julia's skeletal remains in a curled up position on the floor, along with scratch marks on the inside of the door.
All right. So if being buried alive wasn't a fear of mine 20 minutes ago, it is now. But so Julia was essentially buried without being fully dead, or maybe only 70% dead. And she obviously tried to get out. But I mean, Ryan, there's a big difference between mostly dead and all dead. Mostly dead is slightly alive.
Hey, 70, 71, whatever it takes. She was whatever percentage dead, but that part that was alive tried to get out. And the legend, and I know we keep using that word, but the legend is that ever since her remains were discovered, they've been unable to keep the door to the vault shut. And this includes replacements made of steel and metal that they just could not keep clasped. Obviously, no one broke through the metal, but the latch wouldn't stay. So eventually the family just removed any door at all.
Right. And I mean, our understanding is to this day, you can walk right into that family vault on Edisto.
You can. You absolutely can. You can look right into it, but I wouldn't. I've taken my family by there a couple of times over the years because that's what we do for fun, but we've really only looked from the outside.
Worried you'll get caught in there, or maybe another jump scare?
It's that, and there's just, you know, there's lines that even I won't cross. But I will say that next to the Serpentarium, it's probably the highest rated spot on Edisto on TripAdvisor. So if you get a chance, check it out.
All right. Well, that's our episode. My lesson is pickaxe and bottle of whiskey when I die.
I don't know if that's going to help if you're below ground, but above ground, sure. Yeah. Some Baptist kids are playing around at night and, you know, destroying your tomb.
Any other takeaways from this for you?
You know, the wake thing, I have heard that wake is a term attributed to this story, and that they would sit around waiting for him to wake up. I don't know. Where'd you find that?
I was going to say, I just didn't chat GPT that. I did do some research. I mean, give me some credit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know where I found that. But it sounds logical. And I mean, if anyone wants to question that or has another definition of where the term weight comes from, buriedunderbeaufort@gmail.com, or go to buriedunderbeaufort.com and leave a note on our page. There's a form you can fill out. But yeah, I mean, I think that's super interesting. And gosh, I got to feel like in the 1700s and 1800s when we knew so little about anything, I mean, who's to say I wouldn't want to be buried with, you know, all my possessions and a loaf of bread and some low country boil. So I don't blame the guy.
Yeah, that stuff doesn't smell great after a couple of hours, much less a couple hundred years, but
it'll keep the critters away.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, well, that's my takeaway.
Well, with that, I'll say thank you for listening. Wherever you're listening, rate us, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, etc. Go to buriedunderbeaufort.com and leave your comments. We actually sold our first product. We sold a car sticker, which we're super excited about. We have some stickers and some shirts and stuff that we can print on demand. Go to Facebook, Instagram, and follow us. I'm not sure what our schedule is into the holidays. I imagine we might take a little hiatus, but appreciate you for listening to us. And that's all I got. Ryan, anything else?
We're also still working in terms of merchandise. We're still working on hats for bald men, right? Specifically.
Right. I don't have that problem, but yes, hats for bald men.
Well, I'm getting there, but.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. All right.
All right.
Ryan. Another good one. To talk to you later, Beaufort.